Good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome to another episode of Thinking Out Loud with Jesse. Thanks for joining me this morning for an episode I am really excited to talk about, universal basic income. This is one I've been queuing up for a little while, and I definitely spent a lot of time thinking about this one so that I could release it here today. Let's get into it. What we're going to be talking about is how UBI for me, is it a safety net? Is it a slippery slope? Let's get into it. I know a lot of people are going to be talking about this topic in the next 5 to 10 years, so I figured let's add a little bit of fuel to the fire there. So, you know, we do have a fork in the road coming up in our world, and that's what I believe. Universal basic income may or may not be the solution to a lot of the developments we're seeing in AI, in the economy, with job losses, with people being replaced by computers. What does this all mean? For me, I think universal basic income comes in as the ultimate savior to any percentage of the population losing their job or being replaced entirely. Even a 4-day work week, a 3-day work week, a 2-day work week leaves room for universal basic income. So today we're going to talk about what that is, what that means for society, the different opinions on it, because there is no really unified sort of stance on it. There's a lot of differing opinions. And then I'm also going to talk about some people who are in the news today suggesting it. And then at the end, we're going to go over some of the things I think will happen in terms of, you know, how this plays out vis-a-vis capitalism, vis-a-vis socialism. These are topics that are definitely interwoven with some of the stuff I've already covered on this channel. But let's dive into it. In terms of where we're at today in 2025, I do see a fork in the road coming. Universal basic income isn't really a utopia or a dystopia. It's really our fork in the road. It's our decision point. As I just said, AI is going to be displacing jobs. We know this. Lots of CEOs in the tech world and the finance world in general are floating the idea of smaller teams, more lean workspaces, 3-day work weeks. That all sounds great, but the wealth isn't really being distributed. The cost of living isn't really going down. So what does this mean? Well, a little deep dive on Reddit. They're not really reducing hours, are they? They're not really reducing hours because they care about you. They're doing it because they don't really need workers. What did we talk about on the last episode? Data centers are overwhelmingly growing, whereas worker spaces are not. So what does that mean? Well, less need for workers. More people without work, more people without income, more people without a career. UBI sounds like a dream when you juxtapose these two topics until you realize it might be offered by the same people automating your job, owning your house, and buying your vote. So for me, UBI as a concept is something that I'm really excited about. Knowing what I know about the way the world works today, less so. So to go into, you know, how it should be thought about, I would definitely not be the first guy to be pontificating about this. There have been many, many historians that, you know, as a history guy, I really do like to talk about. So let's get into that a little bit. When I think about who is really relevant to this topic, there are kind of 5 people who are definitely more publicized when it comes to UBI: Thomas Paine, Martin Luther King Jr., Milton Friedman, Richard Nixon, and Buckminster Fuller. So let's get into it. Paine, being one of the oldest writers on this topic, I guess universal basic income is you know, not in the digital world, but this guy wrote in 1797, so let's give him a little bit of a break here. He argued for a universal endowment. What does this mean? More like a citizen's dividend funded by taxing landowners. He called it justice, not charity. Similarly, Martin Luther King talked about guaranteed income as the next civil rights frontier. The solution to poverty is to abolish it directly. He saw UBI as a survival, but with dignity. Milton Friedman, another classic economist, more right-wing, however, supported a version called the negative income tax. He believed it was more efficient than welfare bureaucracy, and how I understand it is it's the inverse of positive income. So after a certain amount of money, there should be a tax that goes back into funding the lowest class of citizens, or the lowest income citizens. Richard Nixon also talked about it. He nearly implemented it in the 1970s. The House passed it twice, but it died in the Senate. Just a lighter idea of some sort of welfare. Buckminster Fuller is another one. He predicted automation would make jobs obsolete and UBI inevitable. We should do away with the notion that everybody has to earn a living. And that's a real good place to cement this episode, because we're moving into a productive economy that is really unrivaled in history. No time ever has a single unit of worker or even unit of robotics been more productive. Companies are seeing productivity that would have made them drool 50 years ago. Wages have stagnated. People aren't necessarily more wealthy than they are 50 years ago, but the corporations are clearly better off than they were, right? So UBI isn't actually a Silicon Valley fever dream. It's been talked about for a very long time. It's a moral, economic, and technological response to a world in flux. Obviously, this has happened many, many times in congruence with economic shifts. Post-war era, even when we talk about the printing press, it's one of my favorite things to mention. I talk about it on almost every episode. When people are shifted away from work, what happens? A natural response is to say, well, we should have some sort of welfare system to monitor that and ensure people don't go without, right? Another thing to think about is, you know, this is already very common with other ideas, especially in Canada where we have universal health care. Similar idea that nobody should be without to a certain standard, right? And so a lot of these thinkers, they hit the nail on the head, but it did remain more theoretical. And that's kind of where UBI stands today when we think about it at large. It's all theoretical. It's all a pie in the sky idea. And I think that's why it's a good time to talk about it, because we haven't really tested it in a full way. I'm going to get into that a little bit later on. But society doesn't really know what that means. We did get a taste of it in the pandemic with a lot of the CERB and a lot of the checks from the government if you're in America. We saw this. This is a form of universal basic income. So let's talk about some of the modern advocates now. We have some nervous folks talking about it, and three people that really stood out to me when I did my research on this. Andrew Yang, Rutger Bregman, and Scott Santens. Andrew Yang talks about the $1,000 a month freedom dividend funded by VIT. He warned the robots are coming, and he's probably the largest proponent of UBI. Definitely go and look at what he's talking about. I have to paraphrase him here, otherwise it would take a little bit longer to get across all of what he's suggesting. But he's one of the major proponents of UBI, and that was a big part of his campaign when he ran a few years ago. Another guy, Dutch historian, Rutger Bregman, he talked about how poverty isn't a lack of character, it's a lack of cash. His idea was Utopia for Realists supports UBI as a proven policy. This is a good idea, and I think that when we talk about people who are going without, that is a byproduct of the economic system that we are in. It is not their fault. It is not simply someone's character, their circumstance, their luck that made it so. It could actually be a function of the system, and in my opinion, it actually is. We do have a deep responsibility if we have high earners on one end of the spectrum, billionaires who have tech toys that can take over the world. We should probably have something on the lower end for folks as well, given how far we come with society. We just haven't seen that. We really, in the West, aren't seeing investment in the society by the richest that are in it, in the same way we would see it maybe in other places in the world. So when we look at Scott Santens, he's been a long-time UBI advocate. He talked about trickle-down economics and how that does not work. It's time for the opposite. He calls it bottom-up, and that would be what UBI is. So UBI as an engine for demand and dignity. There are some others that, you know, it wouldn't really be a UBI episode without talking about some of the guys that are making the best toys, the best tech around. We'll start with Elon Musk. He said that there will be fewer and fewer jobs that a robot can't do better. And that's true. We've even seen in the last 5 years how much AI has advanced, how much some of the robotics have advanced too. Even recently, we saw that assistant robot for the home. This is a totally new world. So, you know, when Musk talks about it, he sees UBI as necessary and inevitable, kind of a triage for the mess that some of his companies are helping create. But he's aware of that. Sam Altman is another. He tied UBI to AI-driven wealth via WorldCoin. He wants to build a financial identity system that decentralizes but still enables UBI. It's definitely controversial. It's definitely privacy invasive. And that definitely speaks to some of the larger fears about UBI that I'll get into in a moment. Mark Andreessen, He believes in a post-scarcity future, vague on how UBI fits into it, but he does see it as part of a broader techno-optimist vision. I tend to be optimistic myself, and I agree with that. With the right sort of setting, with the right sort of people behind it, I think this thing would be, you know, a smash hit for humanity. However, we know how things go, and we have seen many, many times power in the wrong hands, what it ends up doing, especially in America, with this runaway technocratic capitalism. Definitely a concern there. We got a few others. Batarin, he proposes using Ethereum as smart contracts for a decentralized digital UBI. No government, just code, DAOs, and crypto handles, all distribution. And then there's the CEO of Zoom, Eric Yuan. He recently predicted a three-day work week due to AI. UBI isn't named, but it's heavily implied that there will be some sort of social response. So, you know, what we're seeing here is across all spectrums. If you're left, if you're right, if you're socialist, if you're Marxist, if you're capitalist, if you're libertarian, everyone thinks that UBI will be in play at some point. It's just more about how it's going to play out and what it looks like. The fact that it's been backed by everybody, by civil rights leaders, by crypto bros, it should tell you everything you need to know. It's not utopia. It seems more of an inevitability. But no one agrees on what happens next. Fortunately, we do have some tests, some real-world UBI experiments. Now, these do have, you know, some sample size, they do have some weight, and let's kind of talk about it now. We tried this in Finland, about 560 euros a month. We noticed that there were higher well-being, no drop in unemployment, and generally there was a positive test, and that's what we saw, positive results. There was another 500 a month pilot tested out in California. We again observed better health, increased full-time work seeking, and people were able to make longer term decisions with the money that they had. They no longer needed to be week to week, and that kind of, or even month to month. And that really allowed them to be a bit more free, be a bit more safe, and we were able to kind of understand that. In Alaska, they did 2K a year, in some places 1,000 a year. I think that's because they have that oil stipend that the state pays out to everybody, which is awesome. We do see the playouts of this in Alaska. It's also one of the most inflated states that there is in terms of what a coffee costs, what a loaf of bread costs. I think there is a coincidence there. And then we did also do a pilot here in Ontario with almost 2K a month. There were some promising results, but it was a political hairball, and it was canceled mid-trial. So with a lot of these, you know, the UBI experiments that we did do, they look good. They look good. And generally, people were happier. Folks were doing a little bit better. We do see kind of baseline behaviors returning after a certain amount of time, which is totally human. But in overall, when you look at these tests and these pilot projects, we really just don't have enough evidence here. If you run a pilot program for 1 year with, you know, 1,000 people, that's great and all in terms of looking at what that would do. But if we're talking about a significant chunk of the economy being on universal basic income, there will be massive downward effects of that from even just injecting all of that money into the economy. Think about the pandemic and what happened with some of the CERB payments in Canada, some of the government allotments down in the South. We saw mass inflation as a result of this. So, you know, UBI didn't make people lazy. It made them less scared, and that's definitely something that I see as a positive. But we're going to need to have a little bit more data. Even so, when people have a base layer of security, stress drops, health improves, decision quality increases, people can think about starting businesses, care for a family, or heal themselves. And most people actually kept working, but with more dignity, more control. So imagine you're working two jobs to survive. UBI doesn't make you rich, but it lets you say no to the third job. That shift in agency can be extremely powerful for folks. And I can tell you, you know, as somebody who has struggled with their finances to getting a little bit more independent, that sort of feeling can be so impactful. That said, we really haven't tested this on a large enough scale to say what the effects would be. So when we talk about economic infrastructure, in an AI world, we might not need everybody working, but we do need everyone spending. And that's a central concept to this. Even the lowest classes economically, they need to be able to buy things, and the economy is essentially based on that. Consumer goods are something that keeps the wheel moving. And if you don't have people working, you don't have people making income, you don't have people spending, then this entire system might fall apart. So UBI isn't just a safety net. It could be a demand engine. If labor is automated and consumers have no income, the system will break. So the UBI could recycle productivity and could put those gains back into the economy. The rich save, but the poor and the middle class would spend. In this case, UBI doesn't trickle down, it flows outward. That's something that could be valuable for everybody. The thing that I really just worry about is, number one, the economy, and number two, human nature. And so when we see the common critiques of UBI, it's obvious and it's there for anyone who wants to go and look. A lot of people would say, you know, won't people just play video games? Won't they just be lazy? Won't it kill motivation? In reality, being out of survival mode might make people more creative, not less creative. It's too expensive is another one, talking about UBI, but compared to what? Starvation, people on the streets having nothing. We need to think about that deeply. That said, it's enormously expensive. And so how do you fund this? Well, we already spend billions on welfare systems in Canada, and that comes with stigma, that comes with red tape. UBI would just be another application of the same sort of ideology. It would just be a reallocation of wealth. The thing is, a lot of the rhetoric behind some of these UBI programs come from taxation. And that's where I have a huge issue. Because in Canada, we are already taxed out the wazoo. And a lot of us feel like the services that we're getting for that tax do not line up to the cost. When you add in UBI, could you imagine being taxed at a higher bracket rate to fund universal basic income? I can't see many people being okay with that if they're already earning enough to support themselves. They might just see it as another tax going to people who don't work, so to speak. Now, I don't know if I agree with that, but what I can say is if you start taxing people to pay for another program that's kind of experimental, you're going to see people leave that place. And we've seen this, you know, everywhere that they up taxes, the billionaires up and leave. I remember a famous story in New Jersey. They upped the tax bracket, and one billionaire said, you know what, I'm going to leave. I'm going to move down to Florida. And that cost the state $250 million in taxes. That's income that they lost. So these things come with a huge consequence. And that's where it's kind of a slippery slope in a couple of ways. So let's say we wanted to do UBI. What does that mean? It can mean a monthly allotment of a certain amount of money. In more extreme cases, it actually means taxing anyone over a certain amount of income to fund anyone who's below the poverty line. This can be extremely dangerous. It can also be a game changer for humanity. The way I look at it is they might say anybody who earns more than $150,000 a year or $200,000 a year is taxed, and that money goes to funding UBI. That's one of the basic ways that people propose paying for it. If you're in Canada, the only other way I can think of by paying for that would be to, you know, mine the living hell out of something in Canada, extract the oil, go and get some of those resources that Canada has. Either way, there's an enormous cost with that, and obviously there's an environmental conscience that you have to have. My point is, it's going to be extremely difficult to pay for, and the cost to society will not be minimal. The other side of the coin is capitalism. And one of the things you'll know about me when I talk on these shows, on this episode, is that I know that there is a scourge in the room, and that's capitalism. I'm not going to say I'm anti-capitalist, but I'm also very well aware of what happens when we introduce mitigations that try and heal the problems that capitalism causes. The direct result of having billionaires is having thousands of people on the streets without enough resources to pay for themselves, to feed themselves, and this week-to-week, month-to-month worry. So that is a byproduct of the system. And so when we reintroduce systems within a system to combat the result of the system, it gets absorbed. And that's kind of what I think would happen with UBI. Now there's a couple asterisks, but let's say, for example, everyone was given $2,000 a month. What would happen? My opinion, and something we did see in the pandemic, mass inflation. The cost of goods would go up. Companies would say, okay, well, everybody has extra amount of this. They would bake that into their prices. In a year, 2, 3, 4 years time, that inflation is already built in, but people are still getting the same amount of money, and they have even less buying power as a result. This can be an easy out for any sort of system that you introduce in capitalism. Anytime somebody puts a reform out, capitalism eats it up, right? it almost becomes a product. So education became debt in our society. Becoming educated became a capitalist thing instead of a good for society. And now everyone who went to school who didn't have their parents paying for them is in debt. Healthcare became privatized. Sustainability became a brand. And now welfare could potentially become biometric tokens. Either way, my big fear about this is that it gets rolled up into all of the same problems that we have today. Either mass inflation and poverty as a result, that $2,000 a month gets less and less valuable each year by about 8 or 9%. We see the runaway train effect of that. The other side of it is, what control do you give up so that you can make UBI possible? And I mean from a citizen level. If I'm going to take that money from the government every single month, what freedoms am I giving up? Why guarantee that any form of UBI would be a digital currency? And I don't necessarily hate that idea, but what freedoms are we giving up in order to make that possible? And obviously, when you have your hand out, you can't bite the hand that feeds. And so that, for me, is just another way we're going to be giving up control on our society. So when you talk about UBI, would it be funded by data harvesting? Would it be distributed by crypto wallets that you don't control that are tied to other societal aspects? Let's say, for example, climate credit. Let's say, for example, allotment for what you can and can't buy, right? This is a big fear by people. Well, if that's your fear, then UBI would be one of the ways that people could potentially cement this in society. So every time we try and fix these kinds of problems, we give a control, we tie them to compliance, maybe we tie it to behavioral scores, maybe we tie it to purchasing restrictions. You can't use that money on gambling or fun, you have to use it on rent or food, right? Just another thing that ends up happening when you introduce these things. So for me, UBI isn't necessarily a bad thing. If we were example to tie it to inflation, that would be a mitigating effect. But like I said, capitalism is so clever that we just have a great enabler happening. Every time we try and do something, capitalism goes, okay, these are the new rules, let's find a way to circumvent that. A great example I think about in Canada is when they banned foreign investment over more than one or two properties. What ended up happening? Well, suddenly every landlord, their brother, their sister, their cousin became a homeowner. They didn't stop the behavior. They just found a new way to get away with it. So, you know, 3-day work week sounds great until rent still costs the same, food still costs more, and the billionaires have even more control, more power, more money. So what's the future that we're walking into? UBI won't necessarily make us free, but it might buy us time to figure out what freedom actually looks like. AI is accelerating. Billionaires are preparing for a post-labor world. Governments will have to respond. UBI is coming in some form. The real question is, will it be empowering or pacifying? A passive income without a purpose can feel like a velvet prison. We don't just need money, we need meaning, agency, and a say in what happens next. So why does this all matter? Why am I telling you all of this now? If we look at the way the world is going, this is a massive, massive fork in the road, something of which we haven't really seen since the industrial world became real. UBI can be a savior in this way. If we take all the technology and all of the tools that we're working on and we apply them for the good of humanity, this can be a game changer. If we're really to ascend as humans to, say, interplanetary species, to being able to travel far and away, to being able to heal our planet, we need to approach some sort of singularity. And this is not my theory. This is a big theory about AI and the future of where this all goes. We are approaching some sort of hive mind, some sort of unified conscience. And UBI gets us there. It is also a byproduct of this AI world. So when you have people being shifted out of the economy because we have better tools, we also have a need to do something with those folks. And it could be an opportunity to reframe how we live on this earth. It could be an opportunity to reframe what people should be doing. Maybe it is the end of the 9-to-5. Maybe people do get more creative. They have a higher sense of community. They spend more time with friends, with family, outside. I know this sounds like a dream world, but robots and robotics and technology was supposed to free us. and what's happened in the last 50 to 60 years, we've seen productivity shoot up as a result of these tools, these technologies. Wages have stagnated. People's freedoms are limited. UBI doesn't really seem like the way out when we think about it like this. And I worry, generally, about what this kind of thing would do in the hands of the wrong people, right? And again, if we tie it to some sort of technology that is not state-owned, what do we do with that, right? We have a certain company that, you know, can monitor all of your data points and can benefit the people that are in control of that technology, but it's not tied to any ownership and the citizens don't benefit from it. That's very dangerous. When you plug UBI into something like that, that's when it can get more about technological control than freeing. And so freedom does start with stability, but it doesn't end there. We can't just settle for a liberal world, even if they offer it to us monthly. It would need to be tied to inflationary measures. Any UBI would need to be. And I would also caution anybody to thinking it's the freedom that they're asking for. Be careful what you wish for, in other words. Because, you know, when we saw CERB in Canada, a lot of people loved it in the first 2 months. It was like a new world. You just had this breath of fresh air. Oh my God, I'm not going to starve. The pandemic is ruining the world, but we don't need to worry about what we're going to eat tonight. Fast forward a couple months, and the cost of living went up so much so that we're seeing inflation that should normally happen over 30 years in about five. That is unsustainable. So if you introduce that enlarged to society, what happens after that? And obviously, you know, we've seen communism across the world. We know what happens when folks are not encouraged to make money, not encouraged to build businesses, not encouraged to create things. And what would happen to the society where UBI is introduced first? Do you think that the creators and the money makers and the movers of the world are going to want to invest in that place? I don't think so. I think that when you introduce higher taxes, the people with the money leave. So we really do need to think about this in a careful way. Again, I think it's going to happen. I think it's generally a good thing as well. I don't want to see anyone starve. And in Canada, basic healthcare has been something that the entire world looks at us for as a positive. You can say what you want about the efficacy of the system. You can say what you want about the service that you might get when you go into an ER. But by and large, Canadians do not worry about their health in the same way other parts of the world do. And that's because of this system that everyone pays into and everyone benefits from. If UBI works similar to this, I would love to see it. However, I'm just a little bit cautious with some of the way other programs have been handled, especially in Canada, where this might not work the way we want it to. Obviously, our government has a massive spending problem, and this would add to the deficits in a way that I'm not sure we could recover from. So that's where I stand on that. It's definitely something that's rooted in history. When it comes to UBI, we've been talking about this for hundreds of years. The data says people will still work and with less fear. It can stabilize demand in an AI economy, but it's not a silver bullet and it's not immune to corruption. And we really need to worry about who is doing it. And if it's done by us and not to us, it'll just become another way we can manage the future. But if it's done to us and not for us, then we're going to be in a bit of trouble and we're going to lose a lot of freedoms in this world. So for me, UBI is this big black box that we really do need to think carefully about. And we should really be elevating this subject to the forefront of discussion as this AI economy is rolling out, as the economy is changing. So again, UBI isn't a scourge necessarily. I think it's a good thing. And I think that we still have a lot to do when we think this through. However, it's something that we really do need to think about now and not after the fact. This is my thoughts on UBI. I want to thank you again for watching and hearing me out on this one. Would love to know your thoughts in the comments below. This has been another edition of Thinking Out Loud with Jesse. Thanks again for listening. See you next time.